Gosh, this is a great way to end a Monday. I'm so delighted to be here tonight with you. I was looking back to see the first time that I substituted for Jonathan. It was 5.5 years ago. So I had this talk planned for tonight on Buddhism and humility. And then something happened. I lost a really lucrative contract, and it really knocked me for a loop. And so I pulled this guy out because this was the first talk that I gave here 5.5 years ago, because it's exactly what I needed, and we often teach what we need to learn. Many years ago, I was on a retreat with teacher Philip Moffitt, so just terrific teacher out at Spirit Rock in Marin County. And he gave this talk on expectations that was really life-changing for me. And so I found myself returning to it again this week after this event, because that money was spent. The new roof, the HVAC, right? The list goes on of things that contract was going to pay for. And it went away, just like that. So, you know, I remember being on retreat once, and I don't know, just the bottom had fallen out of something in my life, and I was just like, you know, Tara said to me, you know, we put our hand on our chest and say this too, you know, this too. May I be able to sit with this too? And so I've learned to do that, and I was able to do that with this, but not until I'd had a couple tantrums. So I want to share some of my discoveries about this topic. So the Buddha identified three fetters. It's not a word we use very much now in modern day language. He also called them poisons. Three fetters are poisons that prevent us from experiencing freedom. The first one is greed, also known as grasping, clinging. Hatred, also known as aversion, and delusion. And delusion, also known as ignorance, is often depicted as someone wearing a blindfold, you know, just not seeing. So we could spend a lot of time talking about delusion. And in fact, I meant to say that I do have a class around Bailey's Crossroads, Lake Barcroft area, Falls Church on Thursdays at 7:30, and all are welcome. So I'm on the IMCW website. And we're going through we just went through the Four Noble Truths. We're going through the Eightfold Path. And so delusion is talked about a lot. But tonight we're just going to talk about this one aspect of delusion, and that's expectation. And we don't often hear about expectations, I think, but for us very overly stimulated Westerners, it's a very relevant topic. Expectations come in many, many forms. The expectations that we have of ourselves, the expectations we have of others, what we think others are expecting of us. So let's look a little bit at why expectations are based in delusion. So quite naturally, we expect that certain efforts will yield certain results, even though many times in the past it hasn't been true. We still hold this belief that we can control outcomes. I'm not sure that we ever completely lose that. It's really human nature to do that. We also expect life to be a certain way. And life for each of us is just the way it is. And any of you that have, you know, got a few years on you and some of your treads wearing thin, you know what I'm talking about. Never expected life to turn out the way that it did. And life does not show one scintilla of interest in how we want things to be. Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
So we have big expectations about how we're going to be happy, about how we're going to be satisfied, and often defining in our heads what that looks like, rather than sort of being open. We have a tendency to lean into the future, and expectation tends to be future-oriented, right? So I'll be happy when I, you know, make X amount of dollars. I'll be happy when I get that contract that I didn't get. I'll be happy when I lose that 20 pounds I'm wanting to lose. I find the perfect partner. Or I have a child. Or my child leaves home. Right? Or when I get that divorce. You know, or my favorite one, when I retire. Such fantasies I have. It's so close. It's like 3 years away. And my mind wants to go there a lot. And I have to remind myself to stay here and appreciate what's happening right now. So even kind of smaller ones, like what's it going to be like when I meditate tonight, when I come to UU Church and I meditate? Or what's it going to be like with my significant other at dinner tonight? Those kinds of expectations. Our lives are literally littered with expectations, and they often go unrecognized. So even when our expectations are completely unconscious, at the moment that we feel a sense of disappointment, we might feel that disappointment in our body. This is the first way that I kind of woke up to my own level of expectations, is I would start to notice what expectations felt like, and especially when they weren't met. A little clutch, a little tightness, maybe some butterflies, maybe kind of an anvil in the chest. So if we're unaware that we even have expectations, we might not see that little bit of irritation that we have, or restlessness, or edginess, you know, that we feel when an expectation hasn't been realized. When something didn't happen we wanted to happen, somebody didn't behave the way we wanted them to behave, somebody wasn't in the mood we hoped they would be in. Almost always, expectations come from a sense of grasping. We're just wanting something, and the desire is so strong that without knowing it, it became an expectation. So this is really the message of the second noble truth, that suffering is wanting things to go our way, that suffering is caused by wanting more of what we already have, of being afraid of losing what we do have, you know, being stuck with what we don't want. Those are lots of ways in which we cause suffering. So an expectation can be a delusion when we keep wishing for something that does not happen. It's going against our own experiences, data that we've already gathered. So have you noticed that many of the things we expect to happen rarely do? So therefore, we have to be a little bit deluded to go against our own experience. Then we'll talk about this a little bit more. Or delusion shows up in the form of expecting different results from the same action, despite a lot of evidence to the contrary. You know, the last 12 times I told my husband not to have that third scotch, he did it. He had that third scotch. But maybe this time he won't. I think I found the right words to convince him not to do it, right? And any of you that still have teenagers in the home know a lot about delusions and expectations. You know, a man that I worked with many years ago, I forgot to mention that I'm a psychotherapist and executive coach as well. And he kept picking the same kind of women that were cold and distant. And after all the warning signs would be there, there would be this expectation of a different outcome. You know, even though the rational side could look and see, it would probably end up the same. So there's a saying in the 12-step programs, you know, many of you might know them as Alcoholic Anonymous or Alcoholics Anonymous or Al-Anon. And in Al-Anon, a saying that you often hear is, don't go to the hardware store for bread because they don't sell it there. And that's, I think, a really good way to kind of take the veil back from what expectations look like. How many of you have said to yourself, why did I do that when I knew it was going to turn out this way again? Right. You know, our expectations create such a narrow, constricted, impoverished vision for our lives. So here's an example of a narrowed expectation in cartoon form. So these two little fish are swimming in this great, beautiful expanse of ocean, and one is saying to the other, I'm holding out for the whole package. You know, the little bowl, the colored pebbles, the plastic castle. So sometimes we have the whole ocean, and what we want is this little fish bowl. So our goal is to stay in the now, to stay right here. When those expectations begin to rise, to just come back. How is it right now? Just being right here. Let's look at some of the ways that we can do that. And this is a classic Buddhist teaching, just to be in this moment, to be empty and open to seeing what's going to happen next. And very few of us are able to stay at that level for very long, so we have to start where we are. And that is just to notice that we have expectations, you know, and I found this to be true of everything that where I want to bring more space. It's just to notice it. This is the beginning. It's just to see it's happening. So I want to explore a little bit the distinction between expectations and possibilities. This is the part of talk that I really need to listen to tonight, because when this big disappointment happened last week, you know, I worked out of the tantrum stage, but I'm still not seeing the possibilities. It's still you know, causing some cognitive dissonance for me. So, as a psychotherapist, people come to me with so many expectations of themselves. Brutal, and of other people, of life being a certain way, getting so hardened around that, and not of the possibilities. And this is what meditation teaches us. You know, meditation is a great metaphor for the rest of our life. We sit, we get distracted, we go, oh, I'm distracted, we bring it back, we're real nice to ourselves, we notice the breath. You know, then we feel this, if I could just move my leg, you know, just all those things that happen on the cushion. It translates so beautifully into our lives. And especially so around this idea of expectation versus possibility. So I'm really wanting to do that, wanting more now that I'm sitting here and talking about it. Yeah, this is why I love Buddhism. This is why I study it. This is why I go on retreat and make myself crazy. This is why I sit in front of you and teach it. I need this. I need to remember to be open to the possibilities of life and not prescribe what I think it should be. It's the height of hubris, really, when you think about it. So in my work, I see this so much when I'm working with couples, because this is the ultimate projection. You know, there's such huge expectations and incredibly unrealistic with people that have decided, you know, to get married or be partnered. And in fact, I call this the expectation hell realm. So this from a cartoon. The husband is sitting in his armchair and the wife is standing in front of an easel with a graph, and she's pointing to one of two grafted lines, and she said, "This line represents my expectations." So we do that. We do that when we partner up. Sometimes we do it with our friends, but marriage and partnership is just, you know, it's just pay dirt for all that stuff. And if we've had a lot of unmet needs as children, we can be particularly demanding and sensitive that our partners anticipate and meet our expectations. Especially for those of us who were not taught how to manage disappointment. It just gets the better of us. It's like, wait a minute, you were the one that was supposed to fill this need. Why isn't it happening? And why are you doing that on purpose? I know you are. You know what I want, and you're just not going to give it to me. So this is a scene in a bridal boutique, and a model's wearing this drab-colored wedding dress, and the salesperson says to her, "Our gray wedding dress is quite a smash with young women who have learned to say goodbye to unrealistic expectations." So even when I communicate what I want, there's no guarantee I'm going to get it. None. How does the old saying go? The difference between a request and a demand is the ability to take no for an answer. And that's a tough one. The same thing, as I mentioned earlier, frequently happens to parents of teenage children when they go in a different direction than you had hoped they would. This causes a lot of pain for people. I see this all the time. Parents want kids to go to this school, want them to study this, a kid wants to do this, and it's just lots of tumult. So I want to talk now about the meditation, going back to the cushion. And for those of you that have been doing this for a while, and I know that there are many of you in the room who have, and I'm not excluding those of you that are new, you can just eavesdrop, but for those of you who have been doing this for a while, I want to talk a little bit about trusting our practice. So the years between 2001 and 2008 were very, very tumultuous for me. I lost a sister, I lost a mother, I lost a marriage, I lost the home I love, I lost several other things, and some very difficult events occurred. And in talking to a friend about how I felt my life was really coming apart at the seams, I was just full of doubt and blaming myself for feeling so unmoored. What is wrong with me? The one thing I'll never forget her saying was, "You have so much strength and possibility. Please just trust that." And my practice, though consistent, was lousy, or at least it seemed that way to me. I was in a world of pain. Nothing felt like it was going the way it should be. I didn't know what to do next. There was no ground under my feet. So my meditation was not great. But I can tell you that that lousy practice saved me. And since that time, I've learned to trust my practice more deeply, regardless of how it's going. And most of us would be well served by trusting our practice. So what's the difference between expectation and possibility? Expectation, as I said earlier, is inherently future-based. It's not in the now, and it actually narrows the possibilities. You know, when we're all closed off to something, hard to be present to something that's coming along. It's hard to see something. You know, something that I always notice so much is I walk in the woods every day. It's sort of what keeps me going. But I go on a 10-day retreat at the end of the year and do a lot of snow hiking. And after 2-3 days of settling in, I start to notice things in such specific detail, such beautiful detail. You know, I mean, you're just kind of high as a kite out there, I got to tell you, you know, after not talking for a few days. And I'm just so open to it. And I notice on my daily walk, you know, I just going along, you know, try to get in all the steps I can and, you know, make my 10,000 steps. And sometimes I'm just, you know, missing things. And I make myself stop, just stop, look up, just see the tree. It's the same thing. Just if I'm so focused on not getting my way, if I'm so focused on somebody disappointing me, if life disappointing me, and whatever it is, I'm not open to possibilities. And they're everywhere. So some of us has this expectation that our spiritual life in particular is someday going to yield a pain-free life. I just get this kind of spiritual thing down. I get this Buddhist thing down, meditation thing down, whatever it is, I'm going to have a pain-free life. And then something comes along and just knocks you on your butt. You know, what am I doing wrong? What's happening? I meditate. I've been in therapy for, you know, 40 years, you know. Why am I still a mess and why am I still not content? You know, some days are like that. I remember sitting with senior teacher Joseph Goldstein, another gem, a few years back, and he talked about a time when he was on retreat and sort of drowning in fear. Really couldn't get out of it. Nothing was working. And finally, it occurred to him to just give up trying to get out of the fear. And he said to himself, if this never changes, if this fear never goes away, it will be okay. Do you hear the surrender in that? You don't have to like it. I'm not saying you should like it. But do you hear the surrender in that? I'm trying to get rid of this fear. And then he says, if it never changes, it's okay. And he said he felt immediate relief. Fascinating. So we've created an identity when we have an expectation, that hardening. It feels solid. It feels unchanging. And what we want doesn't always turn out to be what it was that we really needed. How many times have you gotten that man or woman to call you, you discovered you weren't interested? Where you got the job you wanted and became the job from hell, or the contract from hell. That's probably what would have happened to me, right? Or this person you really wanted to be friends with, and then you started spending some time with them and kind of didn't want to be friends with them anymore, right? A friend of mine wanted this certain kind of car. She talked about it for about 3 years, you know, I'm going to get this, you know, and she finally bought it. And now she doesn't like the way it rides. It has all these problems, right? Or we like what we get and we think, what else can I have, right? We get on the internet looking for stuff to buy. I've never done that, but Joseph Goldstein calls this a catalog consciousness. Or you completely take for granted that thing you had to have so badly, right? We don't picture the new computer that we want in the landfill. Someday that's where it's going to be. Our whole culture is based on, and I would say our economy is based on expecting to have full access to material wealth. We're overstimulated, we're a bit spoiled, and ultimately unsatisfied. And I think these things have come into sharper focus in the last couple of years, things that we took for granted. I recently attended the birthday of a four-year-old, and by the time he began to open that, you know, seventh, tenth present, he looked completely crazy. He was so overstimulated, his brain was fried. Truthfully, it was painful for me to watch. It was a joyful event. It was painful for me to watch. You know, I'm going to date myself, but I remember the oatmeal box and the wooden spoon, right? They were fun. They were fun. So let's talk a little bit about possibility. What do I feel is possible? When sitting, you don't know what's possible. When you sit down to meditate, can I just stay with the breath? If my meditation hardens into some kind of expectation when I'm meditating, I'm going to experience deep concentration, or it's going to be like the meditation I had yesterday or last Monday when I was here. You know, Jonathan or who else was here? Maybe Mary just doesn't know how to teach meditation very well, and I was kind of fidgety tonight, you know. So maybe we think that we're supposed to be concentrated. We're hoping that. The chance of opening, if you sit down with that expectation, diminishes greatly, because if it's not like that, then what happens is the judgment begins. It can happen like that, just like, what's wrong? So in some ways, it's a goal-free practice. That's kind of the idea, is to have a goal-free practice. And if there's any goal to be had, it's to accept how it is right here and right now. That's waking up. If right now my mind is just filled with monkeys jumping from, you know, swing to swing or tree to tree, that's what's happening. And if I can do that, if I can name that, and if I can be with that and say, okay, monkey's just running. I can just, like I say, I always get these, what do we call them, earworms on retreat. I always get earworms on retreat. And then the worst songs, they're the worst songs. Tie a yellow ribbon around the old oak tree. Thank you. Take a letter, Maria. You know, just the worst. You know, and I'm in this beautiful hall, and it's snowing. Take a letter, Maria. It's, you know. And the first year that it happened to me, it's like, by the third day, it was insane. I was like, what? I am so bad. Look at these people around me. They're all blissed out. And I'm, you know, and then finally one say, oh, this is how it is. I got an earworm. What would happen if I just let it be there? What would happen if I just let it be there? And you know, it went away, but I didn't notice it had gone away until it had been a while, and then I noticed its absence, right? Well, this is so weird. But this is just such a great example. You feel that release of the expectation that happened for me. So if we think again of expectation in strictly physical terms, you've got this, like, you know, immobile, tight, fixed, very small. A possibility has got this, in physical terms, it's more open, it's more fluid. It's like that, right? Like that. I have this cool little toy. Maybe some of you have seen this. It's like a, oh, what is it? It's this round ball that's like full of triangles, and you take it like this, and you can open it up, and it gets big. What is that? Does anybody know what I'm talking about? No? Okay. Well, it's this cool little and so I have it in my office, and it's in a cupboard, and someone came to see me with their three-year-old, and I wasn't seeing the three-year-old. I was seeing mom, but the three-year-old babysitter canceled last minute. I go, oh, bring her in. I don't care. So I remembered that, and so I got it out, and I said, okay, so some days we feel like this, and some days we feel like this. And her eyes got real big, and I said, so how do you feel today? And she just grabbed it from me, and she said, like this, right? And she just held it like that, so enthusiastic. So the biggest part of being with possibility is just returning to this moment right here, right now. In the words of teacher Ajahn Sumedho, pain is like this. Unpleasantness is like this. Loneliness is like this. Self-loathing is like this. It's hard to remember that. And the one thing that I've really learned about this practice and the Dharma is that we're just always in a process of forgetting and remembering, forgetting and remembering. Why didn't I remember to say that? You know, when that contract, you know, slipped through my fingers, disappointment is like this. I didn't. I forgot. Completely forgot. So when I'm on the cushion, can I just be with the discomfort without moving just for a moment? Just for a moment. Or when I'm feeling anxious, can I stay with that without going to fantasy or spending or getting on the internet or watching TV or having the third scotch? You know, all of those strategies we use to get comfortable. That's staying in the possible. Can I just be with this right now, just for a second? It's alive in the now. And it really broadens our options. It's just the opposite of narrowing. We're opening into the peace of right now. I work with a lot of people with post-traumatic stress. And the biggest obstacle in post-traumatic stress is that narrowing, is that tightening. And so if I can help people both with my therapeutic techniques, but also with this, with these Buddhist teachings, not specifically that's blind to them, to be able to move from that tight space and just put some space around it and open it up just a little bit. So it's the opposite of narrowing. We're opening to the peace of right now. Who knows what's going to happen? It's not contingent upon anything, nothing. It's saying whatever it is, I'm open to it. In this moment, can I stay with the pain? In this moment, can I come back to my breath? So we don't want to dissuade expectations by smacking them down. Never works. We're trying to move away from them and point ourselves ever so gently toward possibility. You know, I'm not going to just keep beating myself with the Dharma stick, right? Wait a minute, I wasn't supposed to have expectations anymore. I'm a Buddhist. Why don't I, you know? It's like, oh. Because I did that to myself a lot, especially once I started teaching in 2010. And boy, you want to talk about a lot of shoulds. You know, I'm not supposed to have any problems like this once I've become a teacher, because people are looking to me as an example. And if I'm, you know, twice as neurotic as you are, what, you know, what can I offer you? It turns out plenty, right? So opening to possibility is beginner's mind. And so Suzuki Roshi, the Buddhist monk who popularized Zen Buddhism in the U.S., wrote a book called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. Many of you may have seen it. And he said, in the beginner's mind, there are so many possibilities. In the expert, so few. So expectations come from a whole array of interactions, from conditioning, from family, from friends, from culture, from school. And some of us might have a long, long history of unrealistic expectations due to not getting some very basic emotional needs met. The net result might be a lot of neediness and some huge expectations for the people around us. We might want everyone and everything to make up for those deficits. Or we have kind of a mercantile approach to relationships with others, you know, sort of a scorekeeping after all I've done for you. Or perhaps as children, we got our way a lot, and that created expectations. So for me, there's a kind of joy in seeing my expectations, because at this point in my life, I would far rather see them than not see them. There's a real freedom for me in that, to be able to say, man, I am so needy right now. You know, at least I can send a warning flare to the people around me, right? So we have to be courageous enough to see and own the shadow side of our own behavior that way. And it's not really a question of whether expectations will arise. They'll arise for almost all of us. The challenge is whether we can see them, be aware of them mindfully, and oh so gently begin the process of letting them go. And it's not so easy to do, and therefore a false expectation to say, oh, I'm going to start letting them go. So the process is glacial. We need to be content with slowly gaining some freedom and space from them. Or maybe to have less intensity, to be less caught up, or maybe they stay for a shorter period of time. And then, sometimes they come back with a vengeance, like me last week and the contract. Holy smoke. You know, just really so upset, so upset. Have you had that experience where you've been really working on something and then all of a sudden it just comes back and you find yourself acting like a crazy person or thinking thoughts that you thought you know, were sort of done with or saying things that you wish that you hadn't said and you feel like you've lost your ground? So in a perfectionistic culture like ours, backsliding is very, very difficult. So sometimes we might even deny that we have expectations. It would really be a rare person that could claim that. So we're not being real with ourselves in some way. We're not being real with others when we say we have no expectations. And so if we're not being real with ourselves and others, then we may be adding to suffering. So it's far better to have expectations and own them than have them and not own them, because they can do a lot of damage. A lot of damage. We can start to work with our expectations if we're in denial that they are there. Whole areas of our life, if we deny it, become taboo. I liken it to the first time I went snorkeling in the Caribbean, and, you know, the water looked really calm from where I was sitting on the beach, because you don't have those waves. And then we went snorkeling out to this reef, and it was like, it just looked like nothing was going on. And then we went out to this reef, and there's just like all this stuff going on, you know? All these beautiful fish, and then these scary barracudas, you know? It was just, it was like that. There's a whole world that we don't see about ourselves until we dive down a little bit deeper and unearth the expectations we have of ourselves, of other people, and of our lives. So often in our relationships and with children and significant others, parents, siblings, we have those expectations. We don't own them, and they're frequently the elephant in the room. It causes a lot of suffering. And as we move closer into that relational circle, I always say, boy, I can look like the most psychologically mature human being, but just get me 72 hours with my family, right? The closer we get into that relational circle, the more likelihood there is that we have expectations. As Pema Chodron once said, we would all like life to be a refrigerator continuously stocked with our favorite foods. So when we start to recognize it, it's the beginning of freedom from it. We think we know what a good practice looks like. I had a good sit, I had a bad sit. We expect it over time we'll get good at practice. When we do that, we lose the spontaneity of the moment. So I find myself telling this story at least once a week to someone that I am consulting. So during one of his visits to the U.S., the Dalai Lama was speaking with a student, and the student said, you know, I've been practicing for 25 years, and sometimes my practice is so bad, and I don't know what to do about it. I try and I try. And the Dalai Lama looked at him, and he just paused. He said, you know, it's like that for me, too. He said, but I look back 5, 10, 15 years, and I can see there's been a little bit of improvement. So I like that, because this is really counter to how we operate. You know, I want it now, and I see this. You know, we are greedy people. We want things, and we want to be fixed right away. When something's going wrong, we want it fixed right away. So that is freedom from expectations. That's opening to now. So if we get lost in expectations and grasping after that spiritual fruit, we're not bad people, and we don't have a bad practice. We're just lost. So I'm going to close with a couple of quotes that I love. And this is from Philip Moffitt, who really inspired this talk. When you practice staying in the sacred now, the future will take care of itself as well as is possible. My teacher, the venerable Ajahn Sumedho, calls this trusting your practice. It's an acknowledgement that you cannot know the mysteries of how life unfolds, or even of a certain outcome that seems desirable would, if it occurred, truly be beneficial. At the same time, it is a declaration that you can attune yourself to that which is loving and benevolent in life. What else would you choose to align yourself with? Do these values not offer the best prospects for any possible future? So I'm going to have us sit, and then I'm going to read this last poem, but I'd like to see if you can kind of take it in with the bodies and the hearts. This is a poem by Donna Folds called Let It Go. Let go of the ways you thought life would unfold, the holding of plans or dreams or expectations. Let it all go. Save your strength to swim with the tide. The choice to fight what is here before you now will only result in struggle, fear, and desperate attempts to flee from the very energy you long for. Let go. Let it all go and flow with the grace that washes through your days, whether you received it gently or with all your quills raised to defend against invaders. Take this on faith. The mind may never find the explanations that it seeks, but you will move forward nonetheless. Let go, and the wave's crest will carry you to unknown shores, beyond your wildest dreams or destinations. Let it all go and find the place of rest and peace and certain transformation. So may the energy that we generated here tonight be of benefit to all beings everywhere.